We begin the current daven, second school in daf, Kuf Lamed Ches. We begin 6 lines down with the top of the Amid, where the Gemara continues to explain the halacha of our Mishnah, which discusses the topic of our parak regarding the halacha of Rishas HaGez, which is when the shearing of the wool of the animal, any time that the sheep is being shorn, so then there's a portion that has to be given to the kain. And the Mishnah said, and how much has to be given? So when there's 5 sheep that are shorn, then you give a mishkel chamesh shlam, you give the weight of 5 shlam worth of the shearings, that's what's given to the kain. Now, etc. The Mishnah said that it has to be malubin, it has to be whitened and not filthy still with the dirt on the wool. On that Tana, however, we learned in the Braisa that qualifies this halacha of the Mishnah that said that this chamish slum worth of wool that's given to the kohen has to be malubin, has to be whitened, says the Braisa, loishel binenu v'yitnenu loy. It's not saying that actually the Yisrael owner has to whiten it and then give it to the kohen. Because actually what the halacha is being particular about is actually regarding a measurement. That it should be clarified that you're going to be giving him 5 shlam worth of wool. Because the halacha that we're looking for over here is not that the Jew should go ahead and whiten it. Rather, it's the measurement, she'il binenu kayin, that no, the kayin will end up whitening it. V'yamed al chamesh shlam, but then it will end up being 5 shlam worth because weight sometimes has the filth that's inside over there is adding to the weight. So then, if you're going to give him something that when he will whiten, it will then be ending up 5 slum, then that will exempt all the shearings of the wool. That's what the halacha is saying. It doesn't say that the Yisrael has to actually whiten it. That's not his job. But when it's saying that it has to be malubin, is that when the kohen will then whiten it, it will then end up to be a weight of chamish slum. That's how much has to be given. It's a qualification of the measurement. Now, additionally, the Mishnah said that it's kedilasas beged katan. This amount of the 5 slum, that'll be enough wool that it could make a small garment. That's the qualification of the Bimakayim, the mitzvah of Rishas HaGez. Says Imam Manan Mili, where do we know this from? It doesn't seem to say that in the pasuk itself, that it has to be the amount of wool that a kohen can make the smallest garment possible. So Amar Shuman Levi says, because Amakra, the pasuk right after the mitzvah of Rishas HaGez says, why are you giving these matnas kohuna to the kohen, which one of them is Rishas HaGez? Ki vayivachar Hashem mikol shvatecha, because him, from Shevet Levi, the Kahanim Hashem is chosen from all the tribes, lamed l'shuris, to stand there to serve him. Which tells us, davar shehu ro l'shiris, the wool that you're giving him for this matnas kohuna has to be something that's fit, that he could use in the service of Hashem. My niu, what is that? That's the avnit, that's the belt, which is the smallest of the Kohanic garments, which the rabbis evaluated, and they knew that one could go out and make a belt of the avnit with the amount of wool of 5 shlam worth. Now, the reason that is, because actually the belt is not totally of wool. It actually has linen in it too, because it's klayim, it's actually a mixture of wool and linen, because just wool itself actually wouldn't even be enough for a belt. But with the mixture of linen, that's what they evaluated and say that would fulfill the halacha of lamed l'sharis, because you could make a kind of garment, which is that of the avnit, with the amount of 5 shlam worth of wool. And that has the Gemara, be'im me'il. How do you know it's referring to the avnit? It's referring to the robe that the kohen would wear, which is much larger and requires obviously much more type of wool. It just says lamed l'sharis. Which shiris is it talking about? Says the Gemara, no. Tafasta meruba lo tafasta. Grabbing a lot, you can't grab. Tafasta mu'a tafasta, grabbing a little bit, that you could. What that concept is, like a Braisa says in Teres Kainim, in the halacha of Azava, which is a woman that has the tumah of Nida, which is that type of idea, which is between the days of Nida, actually, which is called Azava. As the pasuk says, if you could tell, how does a woman become Azava when she has Dam? It says, if she has this omission, Yamim Rabim, many days. Now, the word Yamim itself is plural, so that would mean 2 days. Rabim, many, is saying for 3 days. For 3 days she has in these 11 intermediate days between the days of Nida, then she becomes a halacha of Azava. So that the Braisa says, well, how do I know Rabim means 3? Maybe Rabim means 10. That says the Braisa, no. Wherever you're saying something that's vague, ambiguous, that could be included a lot or a little. So the halacha is tefasa meruba loy tefasa. You can't try to grab a larger amount. You grab a smaller one, then it's going to be because, since the Torah was not specific, you have to take the smallest amount that's necessarily included in that halacha, because if you're going to take a larger number, I'm going to tell you, well, how do you know to exclude the smaller number? Well, that's also included in Rabim. And therefore, when you're going to say that, oh, a woman doesn't become a Zav until she has, let's say, a flow for 10 days, I'm going to tell you, what do you mean? Rabim is also would include 3. Now, in contrast, when you say 3, I could tell you, wait a second, maybe it's 10. I'll say, okay, even if it's 10, but 3 is included in 10. So the same thing is also over here regarding the service in the Beis HaMikdash. When I'm going to tell you that, what does it mean, Lama L'Shavas? What garment, what amount of wool do you have to give him for a garment? I'll say it's a belt. And then you're going to say, wait a second, maybe it means a me'il, the robe that the Kohen Gadol would wear. So then, you're going to tell me, but the garment, the belt is included in service, and therefore how could you exclude that? But when you're going to say that you're only exempt until you give him the amount for a me'il, I could tell you, what do you mean? How could you exclude a belt? A belt is definitely fit for shiris to serve, and therefore the pasuk says shiris, and therefore that definitely is included, that amount of wool, and therefore, says the Gemara, we're not going to say something larger than that. We're going to take the smallest amount, which is that of the belt. Says the Gemara, but if you're taking the smallest amount, they may keep a shel tzemer. Then maybe it refers to the woolen cap, which is even smaller than the belt, which is also included in one of the Kohanic garments of serving Hashem. The time, like, learn the Braisa. Kipishal Tzemer, there was a woolen cap, Haisamanachas Beresh Kohen Gadol, that was on the head of the Kohen Gadol, Valei Tzitz Nosen, and it was on that cap that the tzitz, which was the plate worn on the forehead of the Kohen, that was placed on that cap. The Kaimash, which fulfills the pasuk that says, V'samta Oisei, that you should place it, which was referring to the tzitz, Al Pasil Tcheles, that it should be on a thread of Tcheles. Now, Tcheles was blue wool, so it was wool. So it's a garment made out of wool. And that's smaller than the avnit in the belt. So maybe it's referring to that woolen cap. Who said you have to give 5 shlom worth? Maybe you can give less. That says the Gemara, no, because Amakra, the pasuk says, by this halacha of shiris, of serving, which is by the pasuk of Rishis Hagez, it says, hu uvanav, him and his sons. Dav hashavah l'aron levanam has to be a garment that's equal Aaron, who is the Kohen Gadol, and his sons. And this woolen cap is only for the one who wears the tzit, which only applies to the Kohen Gadol. And therefore, it cannot be referring to the woolen cap. But then the Gemara says, well, that's the case. And Avni Nami Lo Shavi, the belt of the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedjit are also not the same. So how could be that the garment that you're saying it's for Shiris for Hu Uvanav? As the Gemara qualifies the question. Hanich Lamandam, it would be resolved, according to the one who says, Avni Tishal Kohen Gadol, that the belt of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippurim, which the belt he would wear in Yom Kippurim was made out of linen. As the pasuk says, Mirkat Hazayin Uba Avnit Bad Yachker. In Yom Kippurim, his belt would be made out of linen. That opinion holds that the belt that the Kohen Gadol wore in Yom Kippurim, Loizeu Avnit Tishal Kohen Hedjit, that's not the same belt as that of the common Kohen, what he wears all year round. Why? Because the regular Kohen's belt of all year round is klayim, is a mixture of linen and wool. Like the pasuk says in Shmoyis Lamates, Vesavnit, and the belt is made out of Sheish Mazar, spun wool, spun linen, Tcheles, which is made out of wool. Now, moreover, this opinion holds, when it says in the Torah regarding the belt of the Kohanim that's made out of klayim, it refers to the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedjit of all year round. So Shaper, according to that opinion, okay, you would find that, yes, the belt is the same by Aaron Uvanov, that it's made out of wool with linen, like all the other days of the year, that they both, all their belts are klayim, because the belt of the Kohen Hedjit, we're saying, is not the same as the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippurim, because Yom Kippurim, it's linen. But the rest of the year has wool inside, and that's both Kohen Gadol and Kohen Hedjit. But Elamandam, according to the one who says that the belt of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippurim, Zehu Avnei Tishal Kohen Hedjit, is the same belt as the Kohen Hedjit all year round, meaning that that has the same validity for the Kohen Hedjit all year round, because when it says in the Torah, by the parashas of the Bigdei Kohuna, that it says that the belt was made out of klayim, of wool and linen, that is actually talking about the Kohen Gadol over there. But the Kohen Hedjit, actually, his belt was totally made out of linen. So therefore, the Kohen Gadol's belt in Yom Kippurim was the same as the Kohen Hedjit's all year round. So then you don't find wool in the belt of a Kohen Hedjit. So then the question is, so why are you evaluating the Rishis Hagez with a belt? Because you said it says Aaron Levanov, but you don't have Aaron Levanov being the same because there is no wool that's fit for the belt of a Kohen Hedjit. So Michael, what are you going to say according to that opinion? Says the Gemara, still Shem Avnit Ba'olam. You still have the designation of the garment of a belt there that's the same by both of them. Meaning, even though you're right, there's no wool for the shiris, the service of a Kohen Hedjit in regards to an Avnit, because it's totally made out of linen according to that Mandama, but it's still worthy of a shiris for a Kohen Gadol, and even though you say it has to be hu uvanav, so we would explain the pasuk by saying that this is the amount of wool that's fit for a belt, because that's what the Kohen Gadol uses, and hu uvanav, the children also have an avnit, and therefore, although theirs is not made out of tzemer, but it's still for the type of garment that they both have, which the wool would work for the Kohen Gadol, and therefore, even according to that mandamar, it wouldn't be difficult. Why we're saying that it's a mishkol chamish lam, the amount of the smallest garment, which is that of the avnit of the Kohen. Now the Mishnah said that lehispik litnoi. If let's say the Yisrael didn't get a chance to give the wool to the kohen that before and it was already dyed, so then he doesn't have to compensate the kohen. Now b'chulu etc. Where the Mishnah then continued, as we'll see this halacha later on, regarding that if let's say he sold him one species, let's say that which is a mixture of white and black, and the owner held on to the one that's totally white. So meaning if let's say there are two different types. So although it says in the Mishnah that the buyer has to give from his type, the Rishon is the case, and the seller has to give from his type, the Gemara previously had explained that's actually not the case, the Meicher has to give it. And it's just an Eitzah Teva Kamashmalan, that even though the seller only held on to the good types and the bad types he sold to the buyer, what it's essentially saying is that he should buy back from the buyer, from that bad type, 1/60th, which is the obligation of how much you have to give to the kain, and then they should give it to him. But not that it's an obligation of the buyer. Now, additionally, the Mishnah then continued further and said that if, let's say, a Yisrael buys the shearings of the wool of a non-Jew, he's going to be exempt of giving reishis hageiz to the kain, because that's not considered geiz tzayin chok, because he doesn't own the tzayin, it's owned by a non-Jew. Now, relating to that halacha, the Gemara introduces the following teaching. Itmar, we learned. Gazaz u'machar rishayna. If someone was shearing the wool of a sheep, and he was selling them one, meaning first come, first, meaning whatever he had, he kept on selling the sheep. So right after he would shear the wool, he would sell the sheep before he had a chance to combine five shearings of wool. Like we had said in the Mishnah, that the halacha b'reishis hageiz only starts when you have five shearings of wool. And then you have to have a certain amount, and then you give a certain amount to the kain. So, but here, after everyone he was shorn, so then he would go ahead and sell the animal. So, Rav Machlokes. Chizda Machayv, he says he's going to be liable, he's still going to be obligated in the halacha of Reish Lageiz. And Rav Menasseh Mahoisha, my pati, says he's going to be exempt. As the Gemara explains the Machlokes. Chizda Machayv, he says that he's still obligated in Reish Lageiz, because the Torah says you have to give geiz tzayincha, the shearings of your sheep. Now, he has that. Why? Because Dal Gazaz, because He had shorn them, which actually they bring down that the Girtz of Rashi, as it seems to be evident from Rashi, is that what the Gemara is saying is the Torah says that it should be the shearings of your sheep, and he had that because at the time when it was shorn, each one was his own. So although he sold it right after before he got a chance for five, but he has the shearings of wool of five of his sheep, because when it was shorn, Gaze was Saintcha, then he owned it. So though he sold it after each one before it was all five, still he's going to be obligated. Rav Nosson Mahoishi Amapati says, no, he's going to be exempt. Why? Because Be'idna de Kamali Shiura, at the time when the measurement, when the quota was filled of five sheep, because it's only through the shearings of five sheep that he becomes obligated in the first four, at that time, Be'idna Tzayincha, that's when it needs to be your sheep. V'lekan is not the case, because at that time, none of them are his sheep, because he would sell each sheep right after they were shorn. And therefore, since at that time of 5 years, it's not Tzayincha, therefore it's not obligated. Now, however, the Gemara asks on this opinion, Tznan, that's from the halacha of our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, as we just quoted before, if someone buys the shearings of wool of a non-Jew's animal, even if it wasn't shorn yet, and the Jew owns the shearings at the time of the shearing, still Pater, the consumer, the Jew, is going to be exempt. Maybe it's just a case of giving the shearings of wool to the kain, because it wasn't tzayin cha, it wasn't his tzayin, it was owned by the non-Jew. But the inference is, if let's say the non-Jew sold the body of the sheep, meaning the Jew bought the body for the shearings until it's shorn, it's his, so then the inference is, then he would be obligated because it is his sheep, it is geiz tzayincha, he owns it for the time of the shearing, and therefore it's geiz tzayincha to be obligated. But the question is, amai, why would it be chayiv, kol chad v'chad, basar, gizah, nafkelim, reshus, say each one, right after they're shorn, they are removed from his domain because he only owns it until it's shorn. Right after it's shorn, it goes right back to the non-Jewish owner. And still, the inference of the halach of the Mishnah is that he would be obligated, obviously, because we go after the time of the shearing of each one, not when you have the quota. And then each one that was geiz tzayincha, and therefore you see he's obligated, even though it was not his when you had all five. So says the Gemara, Tirgum Rav Chizda, Alibadir Nasan Mahoishir, Chizda, who is his disputant, he answered for his disputant to say why it's not difficult. Because he says, that halacha would be the inference of the halacha of a Mishnah, for example, if he acquired it to him for 30 days, which Rashi says not necessarily 30 days. What it just means to say is that it's not that it was given to the Jew to own the animal for the shearings, at the time of the shearing. It wasn't only for that moment. It was that he should own all the bodies until he finishes all the shearings, and then it's going to go back to the non-Jew. And therefore, even at the quota of all five, it was owned by the Jew, and therefore, even according to that opinion, it's going to be considered gay. Science, however, is not difficult on the interpretation of Reb Nosson Bar Hishiya. Now, the Mishnah said, as we had referred to this earlier, that if someone buys the shearings of the sheep of his friend, etc., where the Mishnah said, well, it depends. If he sells them all of one type, so then he has to give from that type, and the owner has to give from the other type, which we'd explain that's really Eitz Toiv Kamash Malon. But, however, the Mishnah said that if the seller held on to some of it, then the buyer doesn't have to give any of it. The seller is the one who gives all the rishis hageis. That Allah, the Gemara says, Man Tano, who is the Tano of a Mishnah? The Heichadik is Shiri Gabi Meicha, where if there's still something left over by the seller, that Basa Meicha Zlinan, that we go based on the seller, and he has to give all of those Matanis, which in this case is regarding Rishis HaGeiz, and the buyer, although he has some of it, doesn't have to give any of it. So Rav Chisda, he says, Rabbi Hudi, it's Rabbi Huda. Why? Because the Nan, we learn a similar halacha in the Mishnah Masech Nispeya. Mishnah says, if someone sells, literally means stalks of trees in his field, which really is talking about that he sells them the trees themselves, and he buys it with the fruits on them. The reason why we're calling it kilche, like the sprouts of the trees, is because we're not talking about an orchard. It's not a field of trees. Rather, we're talking about a field of grain. There just happens to be two or three trees over there, which the seller, the owner, sold them to this consumer, to this buyer. So says the Mishnah, so the buyer has to give peya l'chol echad ve'echad. There's a halacha of the corner of the field being left over for the poor, which applies even to an orchard. So on this, the Mishnah is saying that the buyer has to give from every single tree a little bit left over, what's called the corner. Because the pasuk says in Devarim Chavdad lo tefar acharecha, you can't totally liquidate what you're harvesting. Now, what the halacha of our Mishnah is coming to tell us is that although generally when there's a field, you don't have to leave from each tree, you just leave from the entire orchard a little bit. Here, each tree is not going to exempt the other one of peya, because since this field is not owned by the buyer, therefore each tree is like individual, so he has to leave from each tree individually peya for the poor, because if this field was owned by the person, so he would just give from one on all of them, and that would exempt the whole field. But in this case, he has to give peya from each tree. Now, that, Rabbi Huda, he qualifies as, Amos, when did we say this halacha? Is meaning that the buyer has to give, and he has to give from each tree, is bizman shalei shir bal hasada, is where the owner of the field didn't leave any tree for himself in the field. He sold all the trees to the buyer. Ava shir bal hasada, but if, let's say, the owner of the field left at least one tree for himself, so then the obligation would be totally on the seller, on the owner, and then, nisen peya, he would leave the corner of the field, even from the grain, for the poor, al hakoil, for the whole field, and that would exempt even the trees, which includes the trees of the buyer. So says Rav Chisda, what you see from this halacha of Rabbi Yehuda is that when there is a remnant left over by the seller, only the obligation is incumbent on the seller, and therefore it's going to exempt the buyer, because if it wasn't totally the obligation on the seller, then how would his peya exempt the trees of others, meaning that of the buyer? So therefore he's the Tana of our Mishnah. When there's an obligation of Rishis HaGeiz, we see that the seller, if he has a remnant, it's all on him, and we don't have an obligation on the buyer. However, only Rava says to Rav Chisda, how can you say this, that Rav Chisda Tana of our Mishnah, but Vamar Hudamar, you the master of Chisda, you yourself qualified that teaching in the Mishnah Masechtas Peya in Rav Chisda's Halacha, and you said, no, Behu Shehischel Bal Asad Elikter, that this Halacha only applies, that we're going to exempt the one who bought the trees from taking peya, only if the owner of the field already started harvesting the grain before he sold the trees. Now, what does that accomplish? Because that means to say from that moment when he started harvesting is when the obligation of peya started, and therefore it's all his peya, because the whole field was all his. And that moment, whatever he's going to give from, even from the grain, will exempt whatever's in the field, including the trees. Now, however, the halacha would still apply that if the seller had not left over anything from the trees, if he sold it to the buyer, that then he would be totally removed from the halacha of peya of the trees. And you're right, then the peya of his grain would not exempt the trees. It's, however, when he leaves over at least one tree for himself, where, okay, then his obligation that he had in the whole field, which included the trees, is not going to be precluded now from his original obligation. And it's going to be like it originally was in the beginning. But that's only if he started harvesting beforehand. So then it all took effect, the obligation at that moment when it starts as the harvesting. Now, v'chitem, and if you're going to say that hachanami v'ushes chaligzos, that okay, fine. That's the same thing as the halacha in our Mishnah. This that we're saying, yes, it's Rabbi Yehuda. That this that we're saying that the obligation that's incumbent upon the seller if he leaves over something for himself will exempt that of the buyer. That, but you said it's only when he started reaping. Oh, okay, here also, it would also be that if he started shearing the wool, and then he sold it to the buyer, and he left over something for himself, that's where we would say the halacha of our Mishnah. But still says Rava, no, you can't say that. Why? Because Bishlam Ahasam, we understand over there in that Mishnah Masechtas Peah, when the Pasuk says, Ubekutruchem esketzir artzachem ktziv, it says that when you're going to start harvesting the harvest of your field, that's when the Pasuk says, okay, leisachala pasat chalikzir, you're not allowed to liquidate the corn of the field to reap it, to harvest it, you have to leave that for the poor. But what that teaches us is the word ubekutzuchem sounds like that the obligation starts the moment that you start reaping. Me'idna da'as chalikzer, from the moment that the owner starts reaping, mechayim bekulisadah. So the obligation is, on the whole field, to leave over a corner of the field. Whatever's in the field, trees and grain. So there we could understand, Rabbi Yehuda's halacha, that, okay, so now that even though he subsequently sold some of the trees, if he still has somewhat of the obligation of the trees, because he held on one tree, so then he's going to exempt the obligation of the buyer. But over here in the case of our Mishnah Rishis Hageiz, Me'idna de Aschel in Megas, from the moment that the owner who owns all these sheep started shearing wool, Lo Mechayev Bekuli Edrig, that doesn't obligate in the whole flock, because it doesn't say Begizizchem when you like as if you start shearing, oh, then the obligation's on all of them. Rather, Geiz Seincha, when you have the shearing of that sheep, that's when the obligation is. And whatever sheep you do, that's when the obligation is. So then, but what does it have to do with the other ones that he sold to the buyer to exempt him because the seller held on to one of the sheep? It's not on the whole flock, it's on each one individually. So therefore, how could you say that the Tana of a Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda? So Elam Rabbah, rather Rabbah says, a different understanding of the halacha in our Mishnah. So the reason of our Mishnah is because a person is not allowed to preclude his money from its halachic mitzvah obligation, which in this case would be that if he would sell the shearings of the wool of his animal, so what would end up being is that the shearings would be of one person, which is the gaze is by one person, and the tzayin is owned by a different person, which that would exempt both of them, because to be obligated has to be gaze soincha, the shearings of your sheep. And here the shearings is one, and it's not his sheep, and here it's his sheep, but not his shearings. So rather, since he's not allowed to preclude his money from having the obligation, because by doing that, it's not going to have the halacha, the mitzvah of Gei Seincha. The halacha actually is, when he's selling his shearings, he's not selling the matana of the kohen, which is a certain amount, like we said in our Mishnah, of giving to the kohen. So therefore, when he leaves over some of the shearings for himself, you could say that from the fact that the seller did not specify to the buyer that it's besides for the matana to the kohen, most definitely he sold him all the shearings. But that the seller, what he held on to, he held on to the matanas of the kuhnu, because you're not allowed to exempt yourself from that obligation. And therefore the buyer could tell the seller, look, the matan of the kain is by you, because everyone knows you can't preclude yourself from that halachic obligation. Now, however, our Mishnah is saying that if he didn't leave over anything for himself, so then we said that then, that's the Mishnah said, then the lekeach is going to be obligated, not because there's a mitzvah obligation on the lekeach. As we said, that the obligation's on the seller. It's only because we said it's not tzaincha, it's not his gaze tzaincha, how could he be obligated? Rather, it's because the seller doesn't sell the matan of the kayin to anyone else. He has to give it to the kayin. So therefore, the Gemara explains as follows. Hai Tanahu, says Rava, you know the Tanah of Mishnah? It's a Tanah of Mishnah that we learned in the previous Mishnah of Kof Lamed Beis and Aleph. The Mishnah says as follows. Amaloi. And this is regarding other matnas kuhuna, that of the Zerayim and the Lechayim and the Keva. So the person tells his friend, the butcher, he says, Mochali b'nei ma'era shal parazu. Sell me the innards of this cow. Now, b'hoi b'hen matnas, I had inside one of the matnas kuhuna, that of the Keva, one of the stomachs of the animal, which has to be given to the Kayim. Now, says the Mishnah, noisnan, so the consumer has to give it, l'kayim to the Kayim. The Ain and the butcher is not going to be menakalim and adam. He's not going to let him off from the amount of money because he never sold him the matanis when it wasn't specified. Because that's not part of the sale, obviously, and this is going to be the point of Rava, because we don't sell matanis kohanim. That has to be given to the kain. Now, the Mishnah continued, lokach mimenu b'mishkal, if he bought it from him by weight, which if he weighted, obviously he did sell it to the buyer, says the Mishnah, noisn l'kain, the consumer then has to give it to the kain. But a menakalim and adam, then he obviously could get off from the money because that's mekech tois, then how the seller sell him something which he has no right to sell. But one thing we see from this halacha is that from the moment that it was slaughtered, is the kohanim already merited their matanis, and that was an obligation on the butcher. And therefore, that's not being sold to the buyer. If he waited it, then that's a mekech tois, obviously, because that's not being sold. Now, so therefore, by reishis hageiz, most definitely, that if he had specified, and this is what we're not talking about, if he told him, hakol ani moichalach, I'm selling you everything, so then obviously the kohen has no rights over here, because since it wasn't shorn yet, it was already sold, so then obviously then there's not going to be an obligation of reishis hageiz, because no one's going to have geiz saincha. But the reason of the halacha of a mishnah is because it wasn't sold. Because he didn't say. If he's saying, I'm selling you everything, so obviously he is. But if not, obviously we're saying that I never sold it to you. Either, as Gemara is going to shortly explain, either because what he held on to, he held on to himself, the Matnas Kuno, or even what he sold him, but no, that wasn't being sold, and never you have to give it to the Kayin. Because in contrast, this interpretation of Rava is unlike that of Rav Chisda, who he explained the halacha of a mishnah is like a Rehuda, that is, it's included in the field of the seller. There, even if the seller had specified saying, I'm selling you everything, he would still have to give it, because that's not the important point about regarding hakol. But here, as the Gemara continues on Amud Beis and says as follows. So Amo says, Rabbi, what you see from that mishnah Yilaf Kof Lamud Beis is matanis tekayin lemazman inish, like we see from the keva, from the stomach of the animal, he's not selling it to him. So when he didn't specify, and he sold him the innards, no, that wasn't included in the sale. Of course that it has to go to the kohen. So, hachanam here also, matanis the kohen le'mizvin inish. The matanis of the kohen, which in our case, regarding the reishis hageiz, a person doesn't sell. So therefore as follows, hilkol sheir ha-meicher, if this seller held on to some of the shearings, meicher chayv, he's obligated, because damal lekech, what does the consumer tell him? Matanis the kohen gabachi, what you held on to, which is your obligation, is matanis the kohen is yours, it's tzaincha. So therefore when you leave over some of the gaze, it's obviously gaze tzaincha, because the person cannot preclude himself from the mitzvah obligation. Loi shiv, he didn't hold on to anything, loi keachayev. It's the buyer who's obligated, because the amalei meicha, the seller tells him, matana de koin lezabnilach. I didn't sell you matana de koin. We can't do that. You're not allowing yourself to do that. Again, if you said, hakol koin drevchizah, then of course it would be exempting. But if you don't say, we assume that that's not being sold, whether that means it's still by the seller or by the buyer, and that's why there's that obligation that has to be given to the koin in this halacha of our mishnah, which is going like this mishnah of kovalamet beis, according to Rabba's understanding. Hadnulach Reishis Hageiz, which shall return to the 11th parak of Masechta Schulin, parak Reishis Hageiz, which spoke primarily about this halacha, about one of the matnas kahuna of the shearings of the wool. And now we begin the 12th parak of Masechta Schulin, parak Shiluach HaKein, which continues on the theme of the previous parakim, which speak about that we make that contrast. It applies in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz and so on, which is the mitzvah of when there's a mother bird on its nest, which is Shiluach HaKein, the mitzvah of sending away from the nest, the mother, which has the eggs underneath, or the young chicks, that's a mitzvah that applies, Noig Ba'aretz, B'chutz La'aretz, applies, whether that's in Eretz Yisrael, out of Eretz Yisrael, B'fnei HaBayis, B'shalei B'fnei HaBayis, whether the Beis HaMikdash is up, or if it's not around, B'chulin, Avalei B'mukdashim. It applies, however, only by unconsecrated birds, but not by sanctified birds. Ritzik Merzik explain what is this case of sanctified birds that we're talking about, that the mitzvah Shiluach HaKein would not apply to. Now, the Mishnah says, Chaymer b'kis ha'adam, there's a stringency that applies, one of the topics of our previous parakim, the mitzvah of covering the blood of an animal that was slaughtered, mishaluach haken, from that of the obligation of sending away the mother bird from its young chicks. Why? Shekis ha'adam noye, because the mitzvah of covering the blood applies, b'chayu u'ba'if, by wild animals and by birds. Moreover, b'mezumen u'mesheim mezumen, whether the animal was prepared or not prepared. In contrast, b'shaluach haken en noye gele ba'if, the mitzvah of sending away the mother from the nest is only by birds. And in the night, that only applies when the birds were not prepared, like the Pasuk says in Devarim Chabez, ki yukari, when you chance upon. It's not something that's prepared by the person. That's only when the obligation is. As our Mishnah explains, what does it mean that the birds are not prepared? For example, like if there's geese or hens, shekinenu bepardes, who they had rebelled against the owner of the geese, and they left the house, and they're not coming back. They're living out in the wild, and an orchard is not something that's prepared because that's out in the open, and they could run away. So in contrast, let's say if they're in the house that they're nesting, so then Mishnah is going to teach right now, then they're exempt because that's not ki yikari. It's not chance upon. They're here in your house, but they're out in the orchard. They could just run away. So then that's chancing upon them finding the mother bird on the babies. Now, avim kinnu bebayis, but the Mishnah says, but let's say they nested in the house, which they didn't rebel, or v'chein yoni hardisayis, or the doves of hardisayis, which I'm going to explain what that is, but they are domesticated and they live generally and they grow with people. So patim mishaloch. So then you're exempt from sending them away because that's not kiyukari. That's with the person already. That's already mizuman. Now, the Mishnah continues, says oif tame patim l'shalach. The halach of sending away the mother does not apply by non-kosher birds, as the Gemara is going to explain, because the pasuk uses the word tzipor, which the word tzipor connotes kosher birds and not non-kosher. Moreover, says the Mishnah, let's say you have a non-kosher bird that's laying on the eggs of a kosher bird. So though the species of the eggs, of the chicks, are the species that there is an obligation of sending away its mother, still there's going to be an exemption because the pasuk says kan tzipor. It has to be that the mother who's the mekanenes, who's the kain, who's the one that's nesting, it has to be a tzipor, it has to be a kosher bird. And here the mother bird is a non-kosher bird. So to v'tahir reivitz albei oiv tami, if the mother bird is kosher and the eggs are not kosher, so though that's kan tzipor, because the mekanenes, the mother, is a kosher bird, patim alashaleach, still, they're going to be exempt from sending away because, as the Gemara is going to explain, it says, Vesabanam tikach luch. You send away the mother, and the eggs you take for you, that's only if it's kosher, because it has to be for you and not for your dogs if it's not kosher. Now, the Gemara is going to ask, it sounds like from our Mishnah that if you have a kosher bird that's laying on top of eggs of other kosher birds, but if it's not in its own type, it sounds like then they would be obligated. It just can't be kosher, it just can't be that one, either the mother or the children are non-kosher. The Mishnah concludes, Kaire, which is called the partridge bird, which actually our text of Rashi say that's a non-kosher bird, but the Mefarshim explain that's actually a kosher bird, which commonly lays on eggs of other types. If it's a zachar, that's a male, this partridge bird that's laying on these eggs, Reb Eliezer Machayev, he says, there's going to be an obligation over here of Shiluach HaKan. However, the sages say they're exempt from sending away the bird, as the Gemara is going to explain the reason for this halacha. Now, Rib Oven, Rib Maishia, they explained all the Mishnayos of the previous parakim, which we had all the titles of our parakim, which spoke about different categories, which all had these ideas, as we mentioned, regarding that they apply here and there. We had the halacha of Kis Adam, covering the blood of the slaughtered animal, Eisav Es Benoi, which is the prohibition of slaughtering the parent and the child on the same day, Kiranasha, the prohibition of eating the sciatic nerve of the animal, Zerayin L'chayayim, the Kohanic gifts of giving the jaws and the foreleg to the Kayin, Rishis Agez, that of giving the parts of the shearings of the wool to the Kayin, and then that of our topic, of our parag, of Shiluach HaKayin, sending away the mother. By all of them in the Mishnayos, it said that they apply in Eretz Yisrael, out of Eretz Yisrael, when the Beis HaMikdash is around, when the Beis HaMikdash is not around, and regarding the categories of if it applies when it's unconsecrated and when it's consecrated. Now, both are above in your Mishnah. They're each explaining one idea, but they're not disagreeing. They're just explaining a different aspect of these Mishnayos, but the reason why we're mentioning them is because we need to say it B'Shem Amrin, the one who said it. We just don't know which one said what, so therefore we're quoting Rebav and Remaishya. Chanama, one of them says, Kalecha ditznan ba'aretz b'chutzlaretz, in all these pirkin, in all these parakim, when we say that it applies in Eretz Yisrael and out of Eretz Yisrael, shaloi litzarech, that halacha was actually unnecessary because all these halachas that we mentioned are not halachas that apply to the ground, to agriculture. They're obligations that apply to a body. And those halachas apply wherever a person is, as the Gemara learns in the first Perek Masechta Kedushin of Lamed Zayin Beis. And therefore, obviously, would be even out of Eretz Yisrael. Levad Merishas Hagez, the one exception that was necessary to say, is halacha regarding the shearings of the wool that's given to the kohen. Because that halacha that it's supplying even Chutz La'aretz is Lafukim, and Rebbe Eloi is coming to preclude from the opinion of Rebbe Eloi. Dama that he said, Rishas Hagez, Ein Noigel Ba'aretz, he says that actually that halacha only applies in Eretz Yisrael, because he compares it to Truma in that same Pasuk, which is only in Eretz Yisrael. Now the truth is, even the Gemara could have said that by the Matanis, are also, the Matanis Kun of Zerai Lechem and Kevar also have a necessity, because Rebbe Eliyahu actually compares and learns out Matanis from Rishas Hagez. So why did the Gemara pick Rishas Hagez? Because that's the one explicitly that Rebbe Eloi had said, that Rishas Hagez ain't in the Heges El Ba'aretz. And if we pick that, but it really would apply also to Matanis, that's also necessary for us to say it's in Chutzla to preclude from the opinion of Rebbe Eloi. Moreover, continues the Gemara, B'charam, the other Amayra says, wherever the Mishnah said that it applies with the Beis HaMikdash around or when it's not, The Shalai L'tzarech is unnecessary because obviously the mitzvahs continue even if the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Levad Mo'isav Es Benoi, except for the halacha of the prohibition of slaughtering the mother and the child on the same day, because Salka Deitach, I mean, you would have thought to say, Hayalu Binyan de Kachim Ksiv, the halacha of Mo'isav Es Benoi is said in the context of the halacha of Kachim of Karbanis. So you would say, Bizman Deka Kachim Ninig. So at the time when there's still Kachim, which is when the Beis HaMikdash is around, that's when the halacha of Mo'isav Es Benoi would apply. When there's no more kachim anymore, then maybe it wouldn't apply. That's why I have to say that it even applies even b'shloi b'fnei habayis. Now, v'tavaya, I mean, both Rebov and Eremaisha, they both say regarding the other category, kol hecha d'tnan b'chulim b'mukdashin, wherever it talks about that it applies both by unconsecrated and consecrated, which that's regarding the gid hanasha, that it's forbidden, and v'yisav es benoi, that they were litzayrich. It was necessary to say that it applies, meaning, regarding Eisav Es Benoi, we have to say that it applies, because had we not said it applies by Chul Mekdashin, I would have said actually only applies by Mekdashin, because as we just mentioned before, the halacha of Eisav Es Benoi is said in the context of Kachim. Therefore, we have to say that it applies even by Chul, as the Gemara there explains, because Shur interrupts the topic, and therefore we say it's not applying just by Kachim, which is in that context, but it even applies by Chul. And for sure, we have to say the Mishnayos of all those other halachas that to say that avalei b'mukdashin, that they don't apply by kachim, that it's necessary to make that differentiation and say that it's only by chulin and not by kachim. Levad being gid anasha, the one exception that was unnecessary to say that it applies is by the gid anasha, by the sciatic nerve that it's forbidden to be eaten, that to say that it's even forbidden to be eaten by kachim, because pshita, obviously. Mishum de ikdish pakale isa gid anasha, and then you think once it's sanctified as a carbon, then suddenly the isa gid anasha suddenly gets removed? Obviously. So therefore, that's the one that was unnecessary. Which the Gemara asks, why are you saying that? V'lava kimna, but didn't we qualify and explain that halacha in Perek Gidah Noshen of Pites Mabeis, that we said, you know what the halacha is coming to say? B'vlad deis kachim, it's coming to teach us by a child of a carbon, where it's coming to tell us a chiddush that it is going to have a liability of gidah nasha and partaking of something that's a kachim. Because since the sanctity of kachim went and took effect before this gidah nasha, as the Gemara explains that the formation of the child, which then becomes a kachim, comes before the tendons, before the gid, before the sciatic nerve. So it had to tell us that still the issa gid anusha will take effect, even though we generally don't say issa chal issa, that it will go and take effect. So even that halacha was necessary that has the issa gid anusha by mukdashin. Why are you saying that's the one unnecessary? The Gemara answer is, wait, well, my time, O Kimna, why do we have to go through that effort and say it in such a limited case to say it's to my vlad is kachin? La mishum de kashalon isn't because we had asked that question to say, well, for what halacha is it teaching us? Why should we think that it doesn't have the issa gid anasha? So therefore, that's what the Gemara is saying, that we said, loy lisni, it shouldn't have said it. But now that Rebbe and Rebbe Meisha are coming to say these ideas, so you don't have to go through the deichik and can be contrived to qualify that it's specifically only by vladis kachim. Because mi'ikara, originally when you asked the question to say obvious, that's not a difficulty, because yes, there's many Mishnayos that are learned unnecessarily, like we're going through the list over here. And it's Aydi de Tanit, since each one are said, because by one of them you have Litzarech, where it's necessary, so Tani Nami, so therefore but you're going to say by the other ones, even though Shaloi Litzarech, even though they're unnecessary, and therefore also by Mukdashin, that since we said for all the other categories of all these Parakim, they're necessary, so we said this one Halach of Gidah Nasha, which is unnecessary. So to, like we said, regarding Bifnei HaBayis, we're saying it because Eisav Es Benoi, so therefore we say by all the other ones. So to by Chutz Laretz, which are unnecessary, but we say for Reish Lakeis, therefore we say by the other ones, and therefore you don't have to say it's by Vladis Kachim. Actually, we could just say that was the unnecessary one, but we said it because all the other ones were necessary. Now the Mishnah had said that the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein are Bechulin Avalei B'Mukdashin, only applies by unconsecrated birds and not by consecrated birds. Rosh Gemara says, am I lying? Why? Why wouldn't it apply? Where do you see that it wouldn't apply by consecrated birds? Says the Gemara, because the Amakar, the Pasuk says in Devarim, Shaleich Tishalach Esaim, send away the mother. Now, B'mishat Mitzuvah L'Shalach, it's saying, it applies to the type of birds that you're obligated to send it away. Yotzezeh, that precludes a bird of Kachim, Shi'iyat Mitzuvah L'Shalach, you're not commanded to send it away, and Levil de Gizbert, to the contrary, you have an obligation to bring it to the treasure of Hektish, because it's owned by Hektish. And since you can't send it away, you rather have to give it to Hektish, therefore the halacha of Shiluach HaKein doesn't apply. Now, based on this teaching, Amar Avina, he says, Hilkach, therefore, so similarly, Eif Tar Shaharges HaNefesh, a kosher bird, which are the birds that Mitzvah Shiluach HaKein applies to, that killed a person. Then it rebelled, and it found a nest somewhere, meaning they find it on a nest, a tab of eggs. Says, Avina, Pata Mishaluach you're going to be exempt from sending away the mother bird. Why? Because this bird that killed a person has to be executed. So my time is, so why is that a reason of exempting it from Shiloh HaKein? Like we said, because the Amakar, the Pasuk says, Shalech Tashalach HaSeim, send away the mother. But it's only B'mishat Mitzuv L'Shalchei. It's the type of bird that you have a commandment to send it away. Yotz says, yeah, that precludes this bird, Shiyat Mitzuv L'Shalchei, not commanded to send it away. El Levi L'Bezdin, to the contrary, you have an obligation to bring in the Bezdin. And therefore, how we're expounding this is that it's only the type of bird that you want to send it away to be saved and to go and be hefker and ownerless, which this type of bird doesn't apply to, and therefore it would be exempt from the Mitzvah Shaluach HaKen. But on this halacha, the Gemara says, "Hey Chedemi, what's the case you're talking about? E de gamar dina, if we're talking about a bird that was the prosecution had finalized and they decided you have to prosecute and execute this mother bird." So as we continue to talk about kofalam atesam and alav, so bakar taluhu. So this is a bird that has to be killed. How would it have saved itself in the first place and gotten away and be on a nest? It would have been executed. So Ella rather says the Gemara, "No, deloy gamar dina. We're talking about the bird had killed someone, but the verdict wasn't yet handed down." And therefore, it wasn't yet taken to be killed. And therefore, it had flown away. Now, when you find it, you have to bring it to the court. Because you have to fulfill the mitzvah of, you have to liquidate the evil from within you, which is the mitzvah on anyone who encounters someone that's obligated to be killed, to bring it to court, to get rid of the wickedness amongst the Jewish people, which includes also an animal that committed a crime of murdering a person. That includes this bird, even before the prosecution had rested, but there's still obligation of prosecuting this bird. And that's the case that we're talking about, that would be included in this exemption, since it's not a mitzvah sending it away, but rather bringing it to court. Therefore, the mitzvah shlichah would not apply, says Ravina, so too, in this type of bird that killed a person.